But there are other effects on the individual as well. And for those of you that remember a little bit about your high school or college psychology, we're moving right down the road toward Pavlov and the drooling dog. Pavlov was a Russian scientist, lived early in the 1900s. He was doing research on dogs in his laboratory, and dogs were kept in metal cages. Well, you have to feed the dogs, obviously. Now, when you present a dog with food, the dog will salivate. It's called the SR chain. Presentation of food, salivation. They'll drool. Now, some people do too. Pizza, chocolate, right here. I don't know about you, but you don't think about it. It just happens. Now, in order to feed the dogs in the cages, you would have to open the cage, and obviously there would be a rattling sound. And so in the dog's mind, the presentation of food was eventually equated with the rattling sound of the cage. Of course, the lab assistants weren't aware of this until one day one of the lab assistants brushed by the cage with something metal and the dog began to drool and there was no food in sight. And the concept of classical conditioning was born. The idea that you can take that original SR chain, that reflex, again, a puff of air, an eye blink, a loud noise, a startle, erotic material, sexual arousal, presentation of food, drooling. You can take that stimulus, pair it with a stimulus that has no meaning at all to the animal or to the person. In this case, initially, it was the rattling sound, that metal sound. You pair the stimulus that causes the response with the neutral stimulus enough times, and after a while, you can take away the stimulus that causes the response, and that neutral stimulus by itself will cause that same response. And ladies and gentlemen, every day of your life, you are the victim of classical conditioning. Feelings and emotions are triggered by sights, sounds, and smells. That's why when you go to the big amusement parks, wherever they would be, when you exit, you always have to exit through a gift shop. Let's say you go down tomorrow to your Walmart and you find a Mickey Mouse coffee cup. You don't want a Mickey Mouse coffee cup. It's selling for $1. You have no need for that, and you don't buy it. This summer, you take your family to Disney World, and you spend 7 days, and that last day, as you are exiting, you have to go through that final gift shop, and there is that same mug for $5.99, and you buy it. Why? Feelings or emotions are triggered by sights, sounds, and smells. These people that run these places were born at night, but not last night, because they are counting on the fact that when you see that mug, it will make you relive those wonderful memories, and in an effort to relive that, you're going to buy that so you can remember. Now, we could go all, we have a lot of fun with that, but just remember, every day of your life, you are a victim of classical conditioning. What did it have to do with pornography? Let's come back to the point. Everything. At the most elementary level, the lowest level, or the most shallow level, pornography uses other people, correct? Whether real or imagined, for personal pleasure. But it doesn't take much, and as Jerry indicated, because of the pathways of the brain, we become used to what we know. And so in order to get the same level of dopamine, the same elevation, you have to get more different, more bizarre, maybe more rapid. And that original erotica just doesn't do much anymore. The internet, as I indicated, is the crack cocaine. And at the most elementary level, a person is used, but as you get more bizarre and more erotic, now the person is hurt. They're chained, they're positioned, they're forced to engage in things that they don't want to engage in. You see what's happening? The abuse of this individual is being paired with the erotica. And this person could be very docile, would never hurt anybody. But the abuse is being paired with the erotica. Classical conditioning is at work. After enough pairings of abusive material with concurrently with erotica, you can take away the erotica, and the abuse by itself can serve as a sexual stimulus, a turn-on. You want to talk about rape? Have you ever thought about all the things that actually precede the rape as being sexually stimulating to the rapist? Well, that's what's happening. And you say, well, that's disgusting. I would never do that. Okay, let's talk about something maybe more realistic, like spousal child abuse. You would be appalled by the number of spousal and child abuse cases that take place every day in our country. I'm talking hundreds and thousands of them, literally, these cases that are sexually stimulating to the offender, to the abuser, especially when coupled with substance and alcohol abuse.